Krishna, 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 Hare. नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पश्चात्तरेशतारिणे वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे,
हरे कृष्णा
Doesn't seem to be any more place now. Something can be here. I can't see any other place. Hare Krishna. So was there any competition to get the best seats? Or was there cooperation? Because the topic for today is cooperation versus competition amongst devotees. So which is better, competition or cooperation?
Cooperation.
How about cooperative competition? Or competitive cooperation? Well, sometimes it is good to have competition. But that competition should be done in a very healthy state of mind with the purpose of helping and serving others and helping others advance in Krishna consciousness. That is real competitive spirit in devotees. The characteristic of Goloka Vrindavan is that everyone, every single devotee is seeking to serve and assist other devotees. And nobody is hankering to be on the forefront, to be the one to get all the credit. Generally in this world, people try to be in the limelight. Yes, people like to be in the public eye, so to speak. So people like to be on television, they like to have the photographs in the newspapers, and they like to be spoken about and talked about, even if it is sometimes in a not very flattering way. But people like to be well known, to be given credit for things. People like prestige, name, fame. So Vidyapati has said there are three things which really pull people down in this world: puja, love and pratishtha. Profit, adoration and distinction. Puja means adoration. Pratishtha means distinction. And love means profit. So we're all seeking it in a gross or a subtle way. So naturally when time comes for taking credit for something, then everybody wants to be the one to get that credit, because even though others may have done it or it may have been done cooperatively, but we do like to have our name mentioned. Yes, I am the one who did it. So this is a bit of the worldly mentality coming into us. And because of which we want to assume credit for something which we may have done also. And really it becomes a demoniac mentality when we want to take credit for something we haven't done. The world is full of that. and people are trying to blame each other for faults, and faults that may have happened, deficiencies that may be seen. And when something good is there, everyone wants to claim credit for it. I just came from India a couple of weeks ago, and there is a very heated atmosphere because the elections have started in India, political elections for the government. And it is such a noisy, raucous affair. Oh my God, how much they're criticizing each other. They're not leaving any stone unturned. No unspoken word, not leaving anything to the imagination. Everything is spoken. Criticizing and pulling down everybody else. And for all the ills of the country, one party blames another party. And that party will blame the other party. And if there's anything good that is happening, then everyone wants to claim the credit. It's because of us that this happened. So when we are exposed to such an atmosphere for a long time and we don't hear any Krishna conscious things, then we also become like that. And we think that's the way the world is supposed to be. It's just practical. We have to be like that. So everyone flows with the tide. So it becomes our habit, because that's the way our leaders do. Yadhyad acharati shrestas tattat eve parojana. So because the leaders are doing that, so we will also follow. One time I remember, many years ago, when I was a new temple president in Bombay, our telephone lines used to get disconnected every now and then. Those were the days where we didn't know what a mobile phone. There was no such thing like a mobile phone. Maybe it existed only in some places, I don't know, in some other country. But there were only some landlines. So this phone used to get disconnected every now and then. And even the telephone department wasn't able to figure out what happened. Then we noticed, we caught the linesman of the telephone department who was deliberately doing something. Because he wanted some bribe every now and then, because whenever we would have to call him to fix it, then he would take a little something extra. So when this started happening many times, and it was becoming a botheration for our service. So I called him one time and asked him, look, you know, do you think it's the right thing you're doing? Because I made it clear to him that we knew what he was up to. That's the temple, he shouldn't do it like this for the temple. You see, at that time what had happened is a particular big chief minister had been involved in some scandal, some financial scandal. It was big news, headlines everywhere. So I said, if the minister does like this for millions of rupees, then for me, why should I not do it for just a few rupees? So that was his answer. He was not embarrassed, he was not feeling bad. But he felt, because our leaders are doing it, so I can also do it. That's just the established norm. So when people see their leaders, their so-called leaders, acting in this way, when they bitterly criticize each other and pull each other down, something's changed here. Hare Krishna. Yes, it's okay. It's the nature of this world, ever changing. Now there's competition between the three modes also. So when they see the leaders bitterly criticizing each other, and one devotee was telling me that he watched one television debate, because they keep having these television debates on the political situation, and the way they go at each other, it's like a boxing ring or something like that. Maybe in a boxing ring they're a little more civilized. But the way they go at each other and try to criticize each other and pull each other down, when it's credit, they are the first to come forward to claim credit. When it's apportioning blame, it's the other person who does it. So this mentality has crept into the whole world. It's everywhere. It's a materialistic mentality. And after all, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we haven't dropped him from the sky, isn't it? Even the sky is part of the material world, actually. We haven't come only recently from Vaikuntha. So we bring with us the baggage of our previous mentalities, of our previous materialistic misconceptions and unwanted things in the heart. So even after coming here, even when we are sincere in Krishna consciousness, these traces remain. And at times they rear their ugly head, and then we come face to face with the real position of our heart. Oh my God, I have this envy, I have this desire, I have that desire. And then we are surprised. But yes, it's good that it comes up and we become aware of these things in the heart, so that we can eventually subdue it. When we subdue it, we have to do it by some higher principle. If you want to solve a problem, the problem must exist at a higher level than the solution. The solution must exist at a higher level than the problem. In the spiritual world, however, we have exactly the opposite. We have everybody appreciating everybody else, the services of everybody else. Everybody glorifying the devotees, glorifying the Supreme Lord. And it's not a flattery game. We had a retreat the other day and I was mentioning one little story about how there was a wedding of two camels. So when Mr. and Mrs. Camel had invited all the animals of the forest to come, and Mr. and Mrs. Donkey had also come. And naturally when they came out to give gifts and to meet the bride and the bridegroom, the donkeys, in celebration, they started singing to add to the merrymaking and the joyful atmosphere at the scene. So you know the donkeys are known for many things, but sweet singing is not one of them. So, for whatever it is, they went up to the camels. And camels, as you know, they have many qualities, but beauty is not one of them. So the donkeys started praising the camels, and the camels started praising the donkeys. The camels said, "Oh, just see how beautifully you sing." And the donkeys praised the camels, said, "Oh, how beautiful you two look, the bride and the bridegroom." So in this way they started praising each other. So in the materialistic world, the praising of each other is flattery. It is based on some self-interest and is based on ignorance. But in the spiritual world, there is genuine appreciation of the Lord, praise of the Lord and His devotees. And the more one praises the Lord and His devotees even, the more Krishna is pleased and the more we advance and the more happy we become. Actually, Krishna is more happy when we praise His pure devotees than when we praise Him. In English, there is a saying, "Love me, love my dog." You know what this means? People are very fond of pet dogs. So, if you want to get close to somebody, and you start petting his dog, feeding the dog something, speak some nice words to the dog, then the man who owns the dog feels very nice that this person is dealing very nicely with my dog, so he becomes friendly with us. So by treating his dog nicely, we become friendly with that man because he becomes favorably disposed to us. So we are, the devotees are like Krishna's pet dogs. The kantimala we wear is like our leash. So, when we praise, of course we never think of other devotees like that, but we think of ourselves, yes, I am Krishna's pet dog. So when we praise Krishna's devotees, then Krishna is very pleased, very happy. But that appreciation should be very genuine. It shouldn't be like the praise of the camels and donkeys for each other. So in that situation of genuine praise and glorification and appreciation, Krishna becomes very pleased. Then we are happy with the progress that everybody else makes. When we genuinely appreciate the success of someone, the qualities of someone, it reflects a mood where there is no envy in the heart. And in such a frame of mind, there can be genuine cooperation. So long as there's envy in the heart, so long as there is a desire for our own name and fame and prestige and so on, puja, labh, pratishtha, so long as one personally wants credit for oneself for something, one will not be able to have genuine cooperation. There are forms of cooperation found even amongst materialistic people. There is a saying in English, my enemy's enemy is my friend. So if I have an enemy and he also has his enemy, then I make friends with his enemy because we have a common agenda. So we cooperate together because we have a common enemy. Srila Prabhupada one time told a story of how one snake charmer, of course you don't see snake charmers here, but in India still you see some snake charmers. So they sit there with the musical instrument and they play and the snake swings to and fro as if he's mesmerized, and actually does become mesmerized. He keeps him in a little box, and every time he does his performance, he opens the box, and the snake comes out. So one time a snake charmer, he put a mouse in the same box. It's a small cylindrical box like that, into which he had kept his snake. And these baskets are usually made of wicker, cane, or something like that. So as soon as the snake saw the mouse, what did he want to do?
Eat.
Because the mouse is the food for the snake. So the snake was very happy, oh, I've got my lunch, today is my Sunday feast. But just as he was about to do that, the mouse said, wait a minute, look, you are trapped, I'm also trapped. We are both captive. We are imprisoned. If you eat me, then you are imprisoned anyway. I lose, you also lose. But if you keep me alive, then with my sharp teeth, I can gnaw into the material of this basket and I can make a hole. And then both of us can escape and both of us can be free. So it's a win-win situation. So what do you think about this deal? So they struck the deal. So the rat or the mouse gnawed his way out of the hole, and the snake also came out. So this is called the Ahi Mushika Nyaya. Ahi means a snake, Mushika means a mouse. Nyaya means logic. The logic of the mouse and the snake, which means that even two people who are naturally enemies sometimes compete together for a common cause or a common purpose. And then once their common cause is over, then they do not worry after that. Then they go their own ways. Otherwise they would have killed each other or tried to fight each other. But the cooperation between devotees is not like that. The cooperation between devotees is one where there is competition for having the other person get more recognition, more appreciation, more success in devotional life, more opportunities for service. Where we want everyone else to progress and to prosper in Krishna consciousness, that doesn't mean that we will say, well, I won't chant anything, you chant 64 hours. That's not what we mean by saying that we want others to progress at our cost. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that we want everyone to become pure devotees. And when we see others progressing in Krishna consciousness, we feel very happy, genuinely happy. Not that somewhere twinge comes in, oh, this one is progressing too fast. Faster than I did. I took so much time to come to this level, but this devotee has come there so quickly. Or this devotee is doing this service so nicely, but doing it actually better than I am doing, I can do it. So that's the little anartha in our heart, the unwanted thing, that's the baggage we're carrying from our previous lives, that's coming there. So we cooperate Actually, we also cooperate because we have a common enemy. Who is that common enemy?
Maya.
So we are both collaborating with each other to fight against Maya. Our Acharya has explained many times that this Krishna consciousness movement is like a war. It's a declaration of war against Maya. So naturally we have to cooperate with each other. Sometimes even if there are any disagreements or differences amongst devotees, we don't give much importance to that. And we just go on with our Krishna consciousness because we have many, many important things to do in our life. We have to become pure devotees. We have to help others to become pure devotees. We have no time or energy or inclination for little things that may deviate us from this sublime and lofty goal. So therefore devotees are very happy to give credit to others. Even if actually a devotee has done it himself, many times you see it. Oh, this is wonderfully done. The devotee said, actually they did, this one did it. But actually the fact is that this devotee did it. But very happily, he or she gives credit to somebody. This is the nature of a devotee. But for a non-devotee, it's the opposite. The person is the first to take the credit. Well, actually I did it. Last time when I came to Sydney, I had mentioned to you one saying of somebody, a famous politician, not a devotee, he wasn't an ISKCON devotee. He was a president, not a temple president, president of a country, America. And it was a quote about cooperation. Does anybody remember this quote? I quoted it many times. Somebody raises a hand there, yes? Sorry?
Is it Abraham
Lincoln? Yes, yes, that's right. Okay, so you got your translation and purport a little bit there, so it's correct. The exact quote is, there is no limit to the wonderful things people can do working together if it doesn't matter who gets the credit. What do you think? I think this is one of the best quotes I've heard outside of the scriptures and outside of Srila Prabhupada's words. Sometimes these munis, they also have some very useful things to say, very penetrating, because they're intelligent people. Sometimes they're very sincere. So Krishna gives them intelligence to come up with such pithy and very meaningful statements. So can we have three or four devotees repeating this one sentence? Yes.
There is no limit to the wonderful things that we can achieve.
Working
together, provided it doesn't matter who gets the credit.
Yes. So I don't mind if Krishna gets the credit, but this one shouldn't get the credit. Either this one or that one gets the credit, I'm happy about it. You see, we don't mind giving the credit to Krishna because Krishna is far away. But if we give the credit to another devotee, a fellow devotee, then oh, why did I get that credit? But no. If it doesn't matter who gets the credit, then there's no limit. In other words, what limits us? Our personal interest. That I want the credit and everybody else or somebody else wants the credit for himself or herself. Another one or two devotees, please. Who would like to say it? Yes.
There is no limit. People can do wonderful things together if it doesn't matter who gets the credit.
Very nice. Any one or two more devotees? Yes.
There is no limit to the wonderful things we can do together if it doesn't matter who gets the credit.
Excellent. And who wants to get the credit to be the last speaker? One more person. Yes. Oh, you're cheating. You're looking into your book.
There is no limit for the wonderful things people can actually work together.
you got the essence of it. There is no limit to the wonderful things people can do working together if it doesn't matter who gets the credit. This is real cooperation. And for us, who do we give the credit to? We give a credit to the Vaishnavas, we give the credit to the Guru Parampara, and we give the credit to Krishna. This is the devotee. We don't take credit for ourselves. But if we make a mistake, then?
We take the blame.
Then do we pass the blame to the Vaishnavas, to the Guru Parampara, and to Krishna? It's all their fault. It's Krishna's fault. No, then we accept the blame for ourselves. You see, the devotional mentality is exactly opposed to the materialistic mentality. So when devotees want to give credit to others, the materialistic people want to have credit for themselves. When the devotees want to take blame on themselves, they accept the blame because of something they have done. The non-devotees want to pass the buck. They want to have others blamed for something that even they may have done. But you see, the law of karma works inexorably. If I want to take credit for something I haven't done, then I will also get the blame for something I haven't done. Getting the blame for something I have done is painful enough. And getting the blame for something I haven't done is even more painful. So if I want to cheat and get credit for something which I haven't done by the laws of karma, in future I will get blamed for something I didn't do, then I'll feel very bad about it. Similarly, if I want to give blame, I don't want to accept, I pass on the blame to others, I don't accept my faults, and I pass on the blame for my faults to others, then also a similar thing will happen. So in other words, the laws of karma will work on us. Even as devotees, we shouldn't think that these principles don't apply. Only for a completely surrendered, pure devotee of the Lord, yes, the rules of material nature or the three modes of nature don't apply. So the spirit of cooperation amongst devotees is that we are all serving together to please the devotees, to please the Guru Parampara, to please Krishna, to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is our principle. We don't have any other goal. We know the stories of the Prachetas, the sons of King Prachin of Bahisha, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. When they went out to perform austerities as a preparation for their coming back and taking charge of their father's kingdom, they encountered Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva taught them a nice song, Rudra Geet, which is a glorification of the Supreme Lord. They learned that song and they kept chanting it, and they performed austerities under the water as they chanted this song for a long, long time. Finally, the Supreme Lord, seated on Garuda, appeared before them, and he was very pleased with them. And he said, I'm very happy with you, O Prachetas, because you brothers have rendered devotional service unto me with such a friendly spirit towards each other, without any envy. So all auspiciousness unto you, all my blessings unto you, please ask me for any benediction. So because of this sauharda means your friendly spirit of cooperation. Because you have not had conflicts amongst each other. Because you have all served together unitedly, cooperatively, just for my pleasure. Therefore I am very pleased. So Krishna was not as pleased with the Prachetas for the tremendous austerity of being underwater for such a long time as they were for the spirit of unity and cooperation, for the spirit of giving up self-interest and ego, and simply being concerned about the one thing, that is, how can Krishna be pleased? Srila Prabhupada had many statements like that. There is that one statement which is very popular in ISKCON. If you want to please me, then what did Prabhupada say? Eat more prasadam? Distribute my books. Yes. It's a very popular thing. So, all the time at the book distribution marathons, especially, you find these banners everywhere in the temples. If you want to please me, distribute my books. So, this is Srila Prabhupada's family. He said, this is a family, this is a house in which the whole world can live. So, we all cooperate together to simply please Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. And then he narrated a humorous anecdote about a group of brothers who were constantly fighting with each other. And they had an elderly father. And the elderly father now was very, very sick. He was almost about to depart from this world. So he was lying in bed. And the sons came together to massage the body of the father to ease his suffering. Now unfortunately the problem was that even though they wanted to help the father, but there was so much envy against each of them. One of them, they sat on two sides of the father. One of them started massaging the father on one side. So the brother sitting on the other side saw, oh, you're massaging there, and he used to punch on that spot when the other one was massaging. Then where the brother sitting on the other side started massaging the brother sitting on the opposite side, he would come and punch there. Then the other brother sitting on this side would do some massage there, the other one would lean over and pinch hard on that side. In this way, one brother was trying to please the father and to give him some comfort, and the other from the other side, who was in the opposite camp, you know, who would like this brother? They had their own problems with each other, issues with each other. So they would lean and punch or pinch or something like that. And every time this happened, the old father was, what are you doing? It's paining me. So Prabhupada was narrating the story. Father would say, he would cry out loud in pain. But these sons were more concerned with getting even with each other. So you did this side, I'll show you what I did. But in the end, who was suffering? The poor father was suffering. So Prabhupada narrated this to indicate how he would suffer when he heard reports of his devotees sometimes quarreling with each other or having disagreements or something like that. So therefore when devotees work together very unitedly, very devotedly, in a very humble spirit, devoid of self-interest and ego, then the atmosphere is so pleasing. It feels so nice to be in an atmosphere, in the association of people who have no ego and who simply want to help others in Krishna consciousness. However, this competitive spirit is being nurtured so much by the outside world. Everybody wants you to be number one. You see, in countries like Japan, which are very technologically, commercially, scientifically advanced, they have the highest rates of suicides in the world. Something like for the 13th consecutive year, they had more than 30,000 suicides a year. Now, some of you please calculate this, we're good at math. 30,000 by 12 is roughly how much? 2,500. 2,500 a month.
30,000
divided by 12 is roughly 2,500 every month. 2,500 divided by 30.
Yes.
80 every day. 80 suicides every day. Divide by 24 hours. Three suicides every hour. Every 20 minutes there's a suicide in Japan. For the 13th consecutive year, it has not fallen below 30,000. It's always above. And the majority of those who commit suicide are teenagers and young people. Also some among the older bracket. Because they can't take the pressure. Pressure of what? Pressure to excel. Pressure to be number one in the class. Pressure to be, you know, enter into the university with the highest marks. Pressure to get the best job. Pressure to make it in this world. See, there's so much pressure, so much competition, because there's only so many things, positions there. There's only so much resource available, and many people striving to get that. So because of that, there's so much stress, they can't handle it. And they commit suicide. So here, everyone is enforcing the competitive spirit. You must be the number one. You must be the number one at the expense of someone else. And just see the kind of atmosphere that is causing in the world. Because everyone wants to be number one. Everyone wants to be the Lord and the Master. Vaishnavas, we have the slogan, we want to be Dasanu Das. Yes, what's the meaning of Dasanu Das?
Servant
of the servant. Which they find very demeaning. What do you mean you want to be the servant? One time one devotee signed up a letter to his father. He was a brahmachari. He signed up a letter to his father who was a non-devotee. And because he was accustomed to writing to devotees, so he signed off as your servant, so and so. The father was really enraged. Did I bring you up and educate you at university so you can call yourself a servant? So he didn't understand the mood. So we believe we are dasanu das. But in the outside world, they tell you you are dasanu boss. They want you to become the boss. Everyone should be the Lord, you should be the number one. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't strive for excellence. But excellence should not be at the cost of others. It should not be by putting others down and by making them suffer. We can all excel together. There's another paradigm, there's another formula for excelling. Instead of me trying to excel on my own to the exclusion of others, I try to help others to excel and become even better than me. And in that process, I also become better and better. And then I help others become better. And then we have others becoming excellent devotees. And in the process, because I'm serving them in their excellent service, I also excel in my devotional spirit. That is Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada explained one time that in the residence of Vrindavan, this spirit is found. They don't want to directly serve Krishna. They will serve Krishna's devotees. So you will find, Lalita and Vishakha, they will not go directly to Krishna. They will serve Radharani. And Srimati Radharani will serve Krishna. So they want to facilitate Srimati Radharani's service. Similarly, there are others who are called Manjaris, even younger gopis. And they also don't want to serve Srimati Radharani also directly. They will serve Lalita and Vishakha. So they are the servant of the servant. And there are others under them. And they will serve these gopis. And on the other hand, Srimati Radharani says, you know, I'm getting all the pleasure of serving Krishna personally. I want Lalita and Vishakha also to serve Krishna. So then she will engage them in Krishna's direct service. She will arrange, she will do some conspiracy to get some opportunity for Lalita and Vishakha to serve Krishna directly. So there's a competition. Who can get greater favor of Krishna? Who can get more intimate attention of Krishna? We help the others to get that attention and the favor of Krishna. It's not for me, myself. We see sometimes in Vrindavan, one time there was this lecture and then there was prasadam distribution. There was a huge stampede. And we had to announce that this is not like a devotee. So, but it's only prasadam, so we're eager for Krishna, we're greedy for Krishna. But you're not so greedy when it's a question of chanting your rounds. Not so greedy when it's a question of hearing Krishna consciousness or chanting the holy name. So now are you greedy only for this or only for the sake of the tongue? It reminds me of an episode I remember many years ago. In one of our temples, there was a mysterious phenomenon that was happening. The sweet rice Mahaprasad every day would disappear from the deity kitchen after the offering. Pujaris were not able to figure out because they had a certain safe place where they would keep it. And this one, whoever was doing it, was really intelligent. And the devotees concluded it was an insider's job. No outsider could come in and do it. It was someone who knew everything, where everything was kept and how to open things. So the matter went to the temple president. The temple president started. Those were the days you didn't have all these CCTVs and all that. Nowadays you just all sorts of electronic instruments and gadgets which can tell you even what you did in your last life, perhaps. I don't know. So they tried to have people stay up and then hide behind a place to see who would go, but they could not find it. Finally they caught this devotee. It was a brahmachari. And then they took him to the temple president. The temple president was furious. He said, I've been spending my days trying to figure out, I have so many important things to do, and I've been trying to figure out who's stealing this Mahaprasadam here, sweet rice. So why have you been doing it? So he gave him a piece of his mind. So the devotee said, but it's Krishna. He started speaking philosophy to him. He said, this is Prasad, Mahaprasadam is Krishna. It's not different from Krishna. So when I'm greedy for Mahaprasadam, what's wrong with that? It's Krishna's Prasadam. So you can't blame me for hankering for Krishna. So the president was very well versed in philosophy. Yes, you're right, Mahaprasadam is not different from Krishna. But why is it you never steal the Karela Sabji Mahaprasadam? Or you never steal the Dal Mahaprasadam? Why is it you always steal the sweet rice Mahaprasadam? So you're stealing this not because it's not different from Krishna, but because it tastes sweet and you like sweet things. So, well, in the same way, we may have these little other things, but ultimately we have to focus in on helping each other to serve Krishna better and helping them to excel. We should feel happiness in helping others to excel and see others go ahead of us. Of course, because when we are sincerely doing it, Krishna will also facilitate our progress in Krishna consciousness. So therefore in Goloka Vrindavan it's like that. Radharani also helps. The gopis come personally in touch with Krishna. But if they are shy, they are hesitant. So there's a competition. You go ahead, you go ahead, you go ahead. Now this time the privilege is for you. This time the service is for you. So with this group also, the devotees were lunging for the Mahaprasadam, I said, actually you should give others a chance to eat first. And in case the prasadam is gone, then you appreciate the prasadam in separation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to teach Vipralambha Seva, service in the mode of separation. Sometimes you can also hanker, when will I take that prasadam? That's also very purifying. So practically speaking, when it comes to availing of facilities, we should help others to avail of those facilities first. When it comes to doing services which others may not like to do, then we should be the first ones to want to do it. We should be very eager. If some even little things have to be done, that indicates a mentality. So when we take, we are eager to be the first ones to want to do even little things so that we can make advancement in spiritual life, so that we can serve others better, Krishna becomes very pleased with that approach. This is what happens in Goloka Vrindavan. Likewise in our community of devotees also, we should facilitate and nourish this kind of spirit. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, there is the pastime of King Prithu. Many chapters glorifying King Prithu's many pastimes. All of you have heard of King Prithu. He was a very great king, a Raja Rishi, saintly king. He was actually a Shakti Avesh avatar of Lord Krishna. He was a very empowered king. And one time he began performing Ashwamedha Yajna, the horse sacrifices, which is actually part of the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. He was a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. But because he was the king and the people in general, and that was a different age, so the kings were expected to do such functions. So he resolved that he would do 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. Now that was something really remarkable. Only Indra had done it so far in history. Therefore Indra is called Shata Kratu. Shata means 100, Kratu means one who has performed sacrifices. So if someone does 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas or horse sacrifices, he becomes a rival or an equal to Indra, the king of heaven. That is a very exalted position in this world. So King Prithu was empowered in every way, so he embarked upon this series of sacrifices. And every time the Supreme Lord would also come along with the demigods to accept the share of sacrificial fruits. In this way he completed 99 sacrifices. And as the number of sacrifices were increasing one by one, it was increasing the joy of all the devotees everywhere on earth and also in the higher planetary systems. Everyone was feeling very joyful because it was something being done for the pleasure of the Lord. But there was one gentleman who was feeling very nervous. Who was that?
Indra.
Indra was feeling threatened, his position. He felt that if King Prithu is such an empowered personality, if he does 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas or horse sacrifices, then he will have more fame than me. He will become more renowned than me. In fact, he might even usurp my position. He might even become Indra, then what would happen to me? So he became very nervous. And as the number of fire sacrifices increased, he was getting increasingly so. Finally, he couldn't resist it anymore. When the 99th fire sacrifice had just completed and the 100th one was about to begin, and there was a horse that was to be sacrificed, then Indra appeared on the scene. Prabhupada points out that in these horse sacrifices, when the horse was sacrificed, he was only apparently killed because then he would get a new life again. And this was the way the potency of the mantras could be tested. Anyway, these things are not possible in this age, Kali. So Indra appeared there in the guise of a sannyasi, wearing saffron clothes and everything. And he stole the horse, the sacrificial horse, and disappeared. When the sacrificial horse was being led away rapidly like that, Everyone started crying, "Alas, alas, where is the horse going? Who is killing the horse?" And as Indra was flying through the skyways with the horse, Atri Muni noticed Indra. And he noticed the disguise and he said, "This is Indra." He told the son of Prithu Maharaj, "You better chase him and get the horse back." So then the son of Prithu Maharaj, he chased Indra. Indra looked back and saw this valiant warrior coming at him with weapons in hand. And because he was fleeing, the son of Prithu Maharaj said, "Tishta, tishta, wait, wait. How can you run away from battle like this? You must face me in battle." So, but Indra left behind the horse there out of fear. He didn't want to fight with the son of Prithu Maharaj. He became invisible and he disappeared, went away. So then the son of Prithu Maharaj brought the horse back and it was called Vijitashva. He was called Vijitashva. Ashva means, Ashva means horse. Vijita means one who is victorious. So one who was victorious over the horse or who brought back the horse is called Vijitashva. So Prithu Maharaj was very happy, the Brahmanas were very happy, and the fire sacrifice, the horse sacrifice continued. Again Indra came. This time he came in the guise of another kind of sannyasi. This time he had a staff with a skull on the top. You know, there are different kinds of renunciants in India. Maybe many of you have not seen that, these things. When you go to the Kumbh Mela, you will get a complete flavor of idea what it is. All kinds of renunciants and sadhus and babas, and it's quite a mind-boggling experience for those who haven't been there. I went there in 88, 89, I remember. The kinds of sadhus you could never have imagined, or perhaps only just imagined. They all are there. Different kinds of nagas and babas and renunciants. So each time Indra was accepting the dress of a sannyasi that was different. So he was inaugurating, so to speak, a new type of sannyas. And this time it was a sannyasi with a staff and a skull. And they're called kapalikas, Prabhupada explains. They're in the mode of ignorance. They like to deal with skulls and such things, black magic and so on. So, when Indra saw him, he was again fleeing the second time. And when Vijitashva saw that it's a sannyasi again, so he hesitated to shoot and came back. But Atri Muni told him, "No, go for him, he's Indra. He's a fake sannyasi." So then Vijitashva proceeded again after him and Indra again disappeared. So he brought the horse back. This happened many times. And each time Indra was inaugurating a new type of false sannyas, a new type of irreligion, for which everyone was getting very annoyed. Finally, the Brahmanas told King Prithu, because King Prithu was getting ready to go and kill Indra. And the Brahmanas said, "No, no, in this fire sacrifice, you're only supposed to kill the horse, not Indra. So let's not spoil it. But once the sacrifice is over, then we will fulfill your desires." And in the process, then when the time came for them to chant those mantras so that Indra could come down and fall into the fire, the sacrificial fire, the Brahmanas were so powerful. They could chant mantras that could force Indra to fall into the fire. That was their power in those days. Nowadays we will chant and chant and chant and nobody comes in. In Kali Yuga we don't have this power. These are only pastimes we can hear about here in the Bhagavatam and the other scriptures about the previous ages. So in any case, when the priests had chanted the mantras and were about to offer oblations and Indra was getting pulled, at that time, Brahma became very worried. And he personally appeared there in front of the Brahmanas and said, "In King Prithu, please, this is not appropriate. O King, King Indra is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. It is not right that you should do this to the Lord's representative." he is actually non-different from Krishna being his representative. He is in a very exalted position. So you see, let there not be any further tension between both of you. Indra is feeling envious of you. He is feeling threatened by you, because if you do 100 horse sacrifices, he feels that you may become more famous or more accomplished than him and get his position even. But you are a devotee, so you don't mind it. So you stop your sacrifices here at 99. Just imagine. 100, you have resolved to do 100 sacrifices. And then you stop at 99. Those of you, I think all of you like cricket very much. I hope you don't play. And I hope you don't watch TV. But people like to have a batsman who scores a century. Imagine he gets out at 99. Very painful. So Prithu Maharaj was almost in a century. And he had done so much effort to reach 99, and now Brahma comes and tells him, keep it at 99. Because you're a pure devotee. Your fame and name already exceeds, far exceeds that of Indra. Indra's mind is full of material desires, even though he's a representative of Krishna. But you're a pure devotee, Prithu Maharaj. So it doesn't become of you. It's not becoming of you to actually compete with Indra in this way and become also envious. This kind of competition is not healthy. It's not good, Brahma said. And just see, Indra is inventing newer and newer forms of irreligion, different types of sannyasis, and this will cause so much havoc in the future. So please desist now. Be satisfied with your pure devotional service. In any case, this is all karma kanda. And as a pure devotee, you are not concerned with karma kanda. As far as name and fame, you will be eternally famous because of your pure devotional service. You are a Shaktyavish avatar of the Lord Himself. So Prithu Maharaj, being a humble devotee, a very pure devotee of the Lord, immediately agreed. He accepted that. Just imagine, voluntarily, just a few words from Brahma. Brahma comes and says, stop it. And he stopped it. No ifs and buts. And you know, I worked so hard. At least if you had told me when I was about to start, I would not have done it. But not under 99, let me get my 100th one. He could have told him all that. But he never protested. And he happily accepted it. He didn't even grudgingly accept it. Oh, Brahma, why is he doing this to me? Injustice. Unequal treatment, partiality. He never thought like that. You see, this is Brahma. He is a worshipable, respectable personality for me. He is the creator of the universe. So my dear Lord Brahma, whatever you say, Shirodhari, I place it on my head and accept it. So this is the difference between a pure devotee and a mixed devotee. Indra was feeling envy for Prithu Maharaj, and Prithu Maharaj was responding because he was being assaulted in this way. But when Brahma said, be satisfied with what you've got, immediately Prithu Maharaj accepted. And later, actually, the Supreme Lord personally came because he was so pleased with Prithu Maharaj. He came and Indra was behind him. The Supreme Lord, Lord Vishnu, brought Indra with him. And Indra was a little behind, feeling very embarrassed. And the Lord came and said, oh my dear King Prithu, I am very, very pleased with you. He glorified and praised Prithu Maharaj a great deal. And then he said, look, Indra is here now. Indra has come here to beg forgiveness from you. So please forgive him. You are a pure devotee of mine. You have already attained my complete favor and pleasure. You have attained the perfection of life. So don't mind it. Indra has come. Please accept his apology. So Indra came forward. He was very ashamed of himself.
Because he's a devotee after all, you see. So when a devotee, that's the difference between a devotee and a demon. A demon doesn't feel ashamed or sorry when he does something wrong. On the contrary, he might try to justify it by saying everything I did was right. But even if a devotee for some reason makes a mistake or acts in an unbecoming way, he or she feels very ashamed later, feels very repentant later. Oh, what did I do? I shouldn't have done this. Or I shouldn't have said that. So Indra was feeling very repentant. And he came and offered full obeisances to Prithu Maharaj. Now just imagine, the king of heaven coming to the king of earth and offering flat obeisances. Now Indra was very embarrassed. You know, Indra Prithu Maharaj considered himself junior to Indra. And here was Indra coming and offering full obeisances. So Prithu Maharaj was so embarrassed, he lifted up to Indra and embraced him. Said, no, please don't do that. He accepted the apology. In fact, he forgave everything and forgot everything. And then the two of them embraced each other. And all the while the Lord was watching happily how his two devotees had patched up. The spirit of competitive, envious competition was over. And now they would cooperate happily for Krishna's pleasure. So Indra understood. He began to cooperate. So competition turned to cooperation. And for Prithu Maharaj also the same thing happened. The response to the envious competition now changed to cooperation, humility. So because ultimately both were devotees, so then it became so nice. I'd like to read out some passages from some quotes of Prabhupada, which will give us some very nice info. Just before coming here, I was going through this part, this past time. And I'll read out some of the purports, what Prabhupada says here. Okay, so ready for hearing Srila Prabhupada for a few minutes?
Yes.
Don't sleep. In the material world, everyone who comes to enjoy himself or lord it over material nature is envious of others. This envy is also found in the personality of the King of Heaven, Indra. As evident from revealed scriptures, Indra was several times envious of many persons, which means as devotees also these things can happen, and they do happen. Then, instead, he was especially envious of great fruitive activities and the execution of yoga practices or siddhis. Indeed, he could not tolerate them, and he desired to break them up. He was envious due to fear that those who perform great sacrifices for the execution of mystic yoga might occupy his seat. Since no one in the material world can tolerate another's advancement, everyone in the material world is called Matsara, envious. In other words, one who is not free from the contamination of envy cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. And now, please note, in Krishna consciousness, however, if someone excels another person, the devotee who is excelled thinks how fortunate the other person is to be advancing in devotional service. Such non-envy is typical of Vaikuntha. However, when one is envious of his competitor, that is material. The demigods posted in the material world are not exempt from envy. I mentioned this one time in my trip here. Many years ago, there was a book distribution marathon in the month of December. And there were many brahmachari groups going out to distribute books in different buses. We had these bus parties. And there was stiff competition between them for the number one place. And they were running neck and neck. And every morning they would leave early morning and come back late at night. And for some days they would travel outside the city. So one time there was a leader of one party who was really, really anxious that the other team was catching up. So what he did was, very early in the morning at 3 o'clock, he went to the bus of the other party and he deflated the tires. And then when the other team came after the prasad in early morning, they were just 6 o'clock or whatever, they were going to leave. They tried to start the bus and they saw the tire was deflated. So this other group got an extra hour's time to distribute books. But there was a hue and cry, and ultimately this devotee was caught. He said, "What's transcendental competition?" he said. "What's wrong in that?" So what is wrong in that? What was wrong?
Cheating.
He was impeding another's devotional service. That is not transcendental competition. That's material competition. If I progress, no problem. But I shouldn't progress by impeding others' progress. And that was a mistake this devotee did. He wanted to halt or impede the other group's devotional service. Ultimately, who suffered? Whose loss was it?
The whole movement.
The whole movement. Because that many lesser books were distributed, right? That many lesser conditioned souls got the benefit of Prabhupada's books. So therefore, in Krishna consciousness, our process is to not just not impede others in Krishna consciousness, but to excel, help them excel, facilitate their movement. Then later on, Srila Prabhupada also says further about competition, since our topic today is competition and cooperation. Quote, "There are many competitors in ordinary business affairs, and the Karmakanda chapters of the Vedas sometimes cause competition and envy amongst karmis. A karmi must be engaged because he wishes to enjoy material pleasures to the fullest extent. That is a material disease. Consequently, there is always competition amongst karmis, either in ordinary business affairs or in the performance of yajna. Lord Brahma's purpose was to end the competition between Lord Indra and Maharaj Prithu. Because Maharaj Prithu was a great devotee, an incarnation of God, he was requested to stop the sacrifice so that Indra might not further introduce irreligious systems which are always followed by criminal-minded people." So Prabhupada is saying here, the competition found in the material world is based on envy. Whereas the competition in the transcendental sphere, where we compete to help each other progress in Krishna consciousness, is based on a spirit of service and appreciation, of selflessly helping others to move ahead. So that's the difference between transcendental competition and material competition. And another nice purport by Prabhupada. Okay, this is when Indra comes and falls at Prithu Maharaj's feet. Quote, "Indra decided to fall down at the lotus feet of King Prithu. But the king was so magnanimous, a Vaishnava, that he did not want Maharaj Indra to fall down at his feet. Instead, King Prithu immediately picked him up and embraced him, and both of them forgot all the past incidents. Both King Indra and Maharaj Prithu were envious and angry with each other. But since both of them were Vaishnavas, or servants of Lord Vishnu, it was their duty to adjust the cause of their envy. This is also a first-class example of cooperative behavior between Vaishnavas." Yes? So even if there are some little differences, sometimes that may come, where we adjust them, we're just exhibiting the same magnanimity, the same humility, the same sincerity, the same Krishna consciousness. We also create unity in the same way that Indra and Prithu Maharaj did.
In the present days, however, because people are not Vaishnavas, they fight perpetually among one another and are vanquished without finishing the mission of human life. There is a great need to propagate the Krishna consciousness movement in the world, so that even though people sometimes become angry and malicious toward one another, because of their being Krishna conscious, such rivalry, competition and envy can be adjusted without difficulty. So very nice instructions from Srila Prabhupada for all of us to meditate on. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
If you want competition, you have to go to Goloka Vrindavan. The cowherd boys would run with Krishna and compete. Aham Purvam, Aham Purvam. Yadi Duram Gato Krishna, Vanasho Bhekshanayatam. Aham Purvam, Aham Purvam. The cowherd boys would run with Krishna and they would all compete with each other and say, we'll all run towards that tree and touch it. Let's see who's the first one to run. And all the cowherd boys would begin the race. And all the cowherd boys would say, no, no, Krishna, you're cheating. I'm the first one. I'm the first one. So there's plenty of scope for competition when you get back to Goloka Vrindavan. When we can play and frolic with Krishna as gopis or cowherd boys or cows or whatever. And that competition is just wonderful because it's based upon pure love. Meanwhile, the materialistic competitive spirit that may arise in our heart will have to be subdued by the soothing balm and the salve of our devotional spirit, of our humility. This is how we can please Srila Prabhupada, please Krishna, and go back to Godhead and help others to go back to Godhead as well. Thank you very much. So we're very happy we're here again in the house of Satyasen Prabhu and his family. And they have hosted us here in this nice beautiful temple of Radha Gopinath here also. I'd like to thank all of you also for coming this afternoon for this very interesting topic. And if any of you have any questions or comments, please feel free to speak. Yes.
Often we find that when we go to the temple, we meet people with many different personalities. So we don't always make friends with each one of them while we do make friends. So neither we are cooperating nor we are competing, we're just avoiding sometimes. So, and if we've been avoiding for a long time, so we've neither been friends, how can we get over it now? Because then going back, having known that we've seen each other but avoiding, it will be awkward. So
the question is, we go to the temple and we see many devotees. We're neither competing, but nor are we friends, and we're cooperating. We're just neutral. We don't have much occasion to talk to each other. So now all of a sudden, if we start to go out and talk, it might be awkward. That's the question.
No,
why should it be awkward? It'd be wonderful.
No. The personalities don't match, so it's a conflict. There is a bit of conflict in it. So
because
we don't really want to be
match.
Yeah, so we don't really want to be friends as well. It's just a conflict.
Because personalities don't match, you don't want to become friends. Well, alright, there are friends and friends and friends. Meaning that there are different types of friends and there are different levels of friendship you can have with different people. It's not that you can be the deepest of friends with everybody. Be friends with everyone. But you may have deeper friendships with people with whom your chemistry matches. Many times that may happen if the geography matches, that if you are in the same location. But make sure you get your mathematics right. So fine. But be friendly to all the devotees. Deeper friendships you can see as per your, let it happen naturally. They can't be enforced by law. It has to happen naturally. And be friendly, help each other in Krishna consciousness. Even if your personalities don't match, one thing matches. What is that?
Krishna.
Krishna. You both are here to serve Krishna. So why should the difference of personality matter? He's serving Krishna, you're serving Krishna, I'm serving Krishna, he's serving Krishna. So we all work together to serve Krishna. That's all. That's the real foundation of our friendship. Otherwise, the other kind of friendship is, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. That kind of friendship is not of much use. So real friendship is that which is, which means that we help others to serve Krishna better. That is real friendship. A friend in need is a friend indeed. What is our greatest need? Krishna consciousness. If I help somebody to become Krishna conscious, then I'm his friend. And if someone's helping me become Krishna conscious, he's my friend. Regardless of our personality mismatch. Right? Yes. Prashant Krishna. Hare Krishna. Sorry?
So it is like a theory. So theory put into the practice. Need to practice or it will literally come.
Okay, so the question is that whatever we have heard is theory, but if it has to translate into practice, do we have to make an effort to do it, or will it just automatically come one day? Both. The more we advance in Krishna consciousness, the more this feeling of wanting to help others selflessly will also increase in our heart, naturally by the process of chanting Hare Krishna. And by serving Vaishnavas, we get a lot of mercy when you serve devotees. At the same time, we should also make efforts on our part. When we get the opportunity, we should avail of it to do the things we spoke about today and to avoid the things that we shouldn't do, that we've talked about. So certainly we should put these things in practice. We should attempt to do that. I gave so many practical examples of little instances where we could do such things. This is the greatest service we can do. Vaishnav Seva, to help people become devotees. Even to Vaishnavas, when you serve them and inspire them in Krishna consciousness, you don't do anything that weakens their faith, that shakes their foundations. No, we should always say things and do things that nourish people's spiritual lives. We shouldn't speak or act in a way that will weaken their faith or loosen their determination to act in Krishna consciousness. Right? That is real cooperation. Okay? Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah. Just taking your quote, that wonderful things can happen when we work cooperatively and it doesn't matter who takes the credit. So how do we...
Who takes the credit, who gets the credit.
So how do we understand that? That almost seems like that devotional practice that is very, very, very much applicable, and only if we can understand and apply. But how do we take it in our corporate life and apply this?
How do you take it in your professional life? The same way. Ultimately, whatever is your destiny, you're going to get your promotions or your increments or your whatever. You shouldn't be exploited
you have the right to protect yourself from exploitation. You have to do reasonable things that are possible to protect yourself, your family and so on. But also we should have that Krishna conscious intelligence to not be excessively preoccupied with trying to protect our turf, so to speak, and to try to get false credit so that we can make a little progress in our material life. These things will come on their own. The more we get entangled in such things, the more we get pulled into certain states of consciousness. Prabhupada says in the purpose of this connection of Prithu Maharaj, that had Prithu Maharaj gone into that mode of retribution, His Holiness Dear Krishna Maharaj was speaking about it this morning, retributive justice. Had he tried to get into that mode of retribution, then his consciousness would have gone way below. So what such retribution does is it often pulls our consciousness down to such a degree that it is hard to remain Krishna conscious. So you have a right and a duty to protect yourself, but not that protecting yourself means that you should unduly take credit for things and twist and turn things to make material advancement. Do your honest, sincere endeavor and use your time and energy especially for chanting Hare Krishna. Work sincerely, work intelligently, work responsibly, because you have a responsibility at your job, they're paying you for it, so you should be sincere in doing what you're doing here. And rest of your time, you do your Krishna consciousness very nicely. Thank you. Yes, sir, Sam Anderson. Yes,
I have two questions. The first one is related to Indra. What good deed that he did, or like what piety he, because like he always, he always get away from whatever things that he has messed up. Like sometimes, so for example, lifting of Govardhan pastime, someone came and pacified Krishna for him, and now Brahma is coming. So, what he has done? So like he's still fixed there as Indra.
So what has Indra done that he gets away all the time? Even though he blunders, he commits a blunders, and he gets away with it because he's Indra. It's not an ordinary position. Brahma himself said, he may make some mistakes, he may have some material desires, but he's Indra. He's personally appointed by Krishna. So please don't offend him. Indra gets his own reaction when he offends Brihaspati, his guru, he offends others, he falls down. And he has so many troubles when he offends. But that doesn't mean that we should offend Indra, because he's been personally placed over there by Krishna himself. One time my sannyasi was giving class in my temple, and he happened to speak about the Govardhan Leela, in which Krishna subdued Indra's pride by lifting the Govardhan hill. So he spoke a lot about Indra's mentality, which wasn't obviously a good thing, because his mentality was very much opposed to devotional service. And he has spoken on this at length, because that was the verse of the Bhagavatam. And then afterwards he was mentioning, in case I don't make it back to Godhead in this life, it's risky because he may be my next temple president. Indra may be my next temple president, because if your devotional life is incomplete, one of the destinations is you may go to the heavenly planets for a next birth. I've criticized him so much now in the class. And next life, he's my teacher. He said, look, last life, you spoke this Bhagavatam class and you really spoke about me like this, and okay. So he was just joking like that. But behind it, he was making a serious comment that even though we do speak like this about Indra, maybe the demigod sometimes, that's because the episode is like that.
But factually, we should not disrespect the demigods. They are very exalted personalities. Rupa Goswami says this very clearly in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In fact, one of the 64 limbs of devotional service, sadhana bhakti, is that we should not offend demigods. Of course, we don't go and worship them independently of Krishna. That's also another thing we have to remember. Neither do we worship them independently of Krishna as the Supreme Lord, because that is an offense. And to blaspheme the demigods is also an offense. So we offer them all respect, but we understand them to be devotees of Krishna, representatives of Krishna, and that is our relationship with them. So Indra does get away with it sometime, but only just. And it's because people like Brahma have to intervene. Because the universal order has to be maintained. And sometimes he doesn't get away with it. Like Prabhupada narrated that pastime when Indra had to become, he got the body of a hog because he offended Brihaspati, his guru. He doesn't always get away with it. And sometimes he does so at the behest of higher authorities because the universal order has to be maintained. You have a second question?
It was in relation. So, for example, in a temple, there are a few devotees who are doing their services very nicely. But the new devotees have joined in now, and they're doing the same service better than the existing devotees. Now, what is happening is like these devotees are sort of like taken over, and they are doing that service, and they are getting that, and like these, there's a divide now. And they are kind of jealous of the other devotees who are doing it really well. So how can if management wants to resolve this, right? How can this divide be resolved? Like, so basically they are not getting that any opportunity anymore because the new devotees who have come in, they're doing it, they're excelled in it, and they're doing really nicely. So how can we resolve that divide?
Okay, so the question is that some devotees are doing a certain kind of service. They kept on doing it, and another group of newer devotees came in. They also started doing that, and they excelled the older devotees in the way they did that service. And therefore, the older devotees started feeling a little uncomfortable about it. So how does one divide, or how does one manage this schism, this divide? But just be Krishna conscious, that's all. Very simple. These are really small things in life. But when we are not Krishna conscious, these small things can become so big. They can occupy our mind and make it seem like it's a very big thing. But actually it's so little, such a small thing. And as we just discussed, how should we feel? If someone else is doing something better than me, how should I feel? I should feel happy. I should appreciate it, and I should feel really happy. And we should appreciate that. So, that's the mentality we should all develop. We should encourage and facilitate everyone to do Krishna's service. It is everybody's birthright to serve Krishna. So it is our duty as devotees to facilitate every single living entity who comes, somehow or the other, engage him or her in Krishna's service. And if someone is doing that service very nicely, so nice, wonderful. We should encourage them. So it means that we have to be very Krishna conscious. Real cooperation and freedom from competitiveness comes to the degree we are Krishna conscious. The more Krishna conscious we are, the easier it is and the more natural it is for us to just easily sort out such little things. Right? Any other question? Yes?
Not a question, a comment. There's another English saying, if you can't beat them, join them.
If you can't beat them, join them, yes. So then we join the devotees in doing it, and sometimes, and I know devotees who are humble enough to do that, they teach somebody something, And that devotee becomes better than this devotee who taught him to do all these things. And then the first devotee who was a teacher actually then goes and learns from this devotee. Yes, it happens. Actually, the teacher should feel very happy and proud. Just see, this devotee has known so much, he's gone far beyond me, now I have to go and learn from him. So nice, wonderful. This is Krishna consciousness. A heart completely free from envy. When we genuinely feel happiness at the happiness and progress of others. Otherwise, the materialistic life is simply just a life of increasing the materialistic fever, envy, and so on. You know, Prabhupada used to tell that story about the maidservant and the housewife. One time there was a rich man, and his wife fell sick one time, and she had fever of 100 degrees, 101. And there was a maidservant in the house who also had fever, and she had fever of 104. So when the mistress of the house heard that the maidservant had 104 degrees fever, and that she herself had only 101, she became very angry. She said, how can the maidservant have more than me? So she became very angry. Her husband tried to tell her, look, what are you upset about? The maidservant has more fever. She has 104 degrees fever and you have 101, so what is the problem? He said, no, I'm the mistress of the house. She can't have anything more than me. So then what can be done if this is a mentality? So I don't know finally what happened. But in any case, so the materialistic mentality is, whatever it may be, I can't tolerate someone bypassing me. You know, I have one devotee came up to me in the UK and said, you know, I have this problem. When I'm driving, if somebody overtakes me, I can't tolerate it. And he actually got into trouble. Actually, it's a lady, I'll be honest. And she got into trouble one time because she got so angry that this person was overtaking. She, you know, went and did something, and then something happened, and then it led to something else. And much of these things on the road happen, there's something called road rage. And that causes a lot of friction. People kill each other sometimes with road rage. And they get so upset, someone overtakes somebody else, they edge each other off the road, and they do all sorts of things. I don't know if they do it in Australia, but in other countries it happens. They will just come in front of you and slide you off the road. They do all sorts of things. No one should go ahead of me. I should be the number one. But devotional mentality is, let the whole world progress in Krishna consciousness. I will also not be in Maya, I will also be Krishna conscious, but I will be their servant. I will be the servant of their servant. And that's my glory. And if I take that mood, then Krishna will consider actually me to be the best devotee. But of course, I don't do it without calculation. Then that means I genuinely don't have that mood. So yes, this is a feeling we have to try to cultivate. And whenever we see the protest coming within the heart, when an anartha comes up, a little ugly head comes up and says, I'm here. Why is this one going ahead faster? Why is that one chanting kirtan better? Why is that one cooking better? We should actually say, no. Subdue that little demon inside the heart and feel happiness. A Vaishnava is Paradukha Dukhi, feels sorrow at the sorrow of others. He is Parasukha Sukhi, he feels happiness at the happiness of others. But the materialistic people are Parasukha Dukhi. At others' happiness they feel distress. And Paradukha Sukhi, at others' distress, they feel happiness. Where a devotee feels joy in seeing others happy in Krishna consciousness. This is our life. These are the things that give devotees joy. The greatest joy for a devotee is to see another devotee relishing Krishna consciousness. And to see that person accepting Krishna consciousness and make progress in it. This is our joy of life. So simple. Right? Any other questions or comments? Yes.
I therefore conclude that with celebrity, other que sera sera, whatever will be through consciousness. Love each other every minute, every second, whatever it is. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. All right, so, yes.
Maharaj, I have a similar question.
Okay.
Generally, devotees are very enthusiastic to take up services,
mm-hmm.
but it also leads to possessiveness. So they're very attached to the service. They don't like to share it with others, and they try to take on too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of competition in service.
Sounds familiar? The question is that we sometimes do service and we become very possessive about the service. And we take on more and more, and sometimes more than we can handle, and we don't want to share it with others. Sometimes these things happen on the very, very transcendental platform, but that's a different universe altogether. We can't claim to be at that platform. So for us, it's natural. We all want service. And it's nice to feel possessive about the service in the sense that we take ownership of that service, we take responsibility, we do it very nicely. At the same time, yes, we must also give others the opportunity to do such services if they want to and encourage them so that they also make progress in their Krishna consciousness. There's enough service to do for Krishna, there's unlimited service. So we should not have the scarcity mentality. Scarcity mentality means that there's only this much and I'll hog it all for myself. No. For Krishna there's unlimited service. So if there's more and more people coming to do one service, let them do it. And there's hundreds of other services I can do. So we should have a big heart to accommodate everyone in Krishna consciousness. A small heart likes to keep everything for oneself. But the big heart wants to share. And the more you share, the more everybody benefits. Krishna gives unlimitedly more if you are big-hearted and you share with everybody. But if we become small-hearted and we try to keep things for ourselves, then Krishna also takes away the mercy. So we should definitely empower others. We should help others to become proficient in doing their services. We should facilitate their services. We should help them and serve them in whatever way they can. Then such a community of devotees will be always blissful. And everybody will be happy. Hare Krishna. So we stop here. So, our host, Haseen, Shikha, we just have a few minutes of tea for now, I think.